Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? This is Austin Walker, and this is not a normal episode of Waypoint Radio. We are doing a thing that we do every now and then, and we're chatting with a guest. Today, I am talking with John Everest, who is the composer of the recently released Battletech by Harebrained Schemes. John has been a composer on a number of other games for Harebrained Schemes, including Shadowrun Hong Kong, Necropolis, and some other stuff too, John?
Those are the main ones. I did some music for Shadowrun Dragonfall as well.
Right. Okay, great. Which also has some great music and is a great game. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
So we were recording this the day after the game launched. People finally have it in their hands. How does that feel?
It feels very weird. I mean, I've been working on the game for over 2.5 years, so it's just been a long time having it like my own little precious thing that I've been building. And so now that it's out there in the world, it's kind of like, you know, it's invigorating but also terrifying at the same time. You know?
Totally. I mean, so you started 2.5 years ago. What was the pitch you got for this project when you know, someone says, all right, here's what our next project is, here's what we want you to do? What was that ask like for you?
Yeah, so I always knew that Battletech was something that Jordan Weissman and Mitch Gittleman wanted to do. I just didn't know like how serious they were about it. So the pitch that I got was basically like, this is Game of Thrones in space with giant robots was basically the pitch that I got initially. And I was like, okay, and started writing immediately after that. That's really all I needed to hear to get going.
Awesome. So, I mean, at that point, were you still on Hong Kong, or had you wrapped that?
Yeah. So Shadowrun Hong Kong had basically just came out. And then there were talks, I think, right after that about getting the Kickstarter stuff ready.
Gotcha. Which means you needed music for the Kickstarter, obviously. You needed something that felt right for getting people excited about giant robots and space, you know, not fantasy, but space politicking, you know.
Exactly.
That's a necessary thing. So I'm curious, like, having played through Shadowrun Hong Kong and now having playing through Battletech, their vibes are not, like, you know, hyper similar in terms of tone or I mean, I guess actually what I mean is they're actually not that different, right? Like they take themselves fairly seriously. They care about their characters. These are games that care about the politics of the world and that are interested in technology and old technology and new technology and about factions, you know, fighting each other and about secrets and about betrayal. But also, sonically, they are different, right? Like, you didn't go to the same well. And I'm curious about what the process was like going from Shadowrun Hong Kong to going to Battletech and kind of how you got your head right and what some of the techniques were that you were pursuing in kind of making sure that Battletech had its own flavor.
Yeah, I mean, definitely they're two extremely different IPs. I think kind of tied them together for me was that I didn't grow up as so I played Shadowrun the game on SNES, I think it was, when I was a little kid. That was like
good
one
game.
Of the first adult you know, mature games that I had played as a young kid, but I didn't get like into the tabletop and I didn't go down like the deep lore path with that. So I approached Shadowrun is kind of like a newcomer to that sort of stuff, and that's a similar way that I approached Battletech as well. I played MechWarrior 2 as a kid.
Sure.
It was one of the first PC games that I kind of ever played, or first games that I played on PC. but I didn't really get, to me, it was just giant robots, you know, stompy robots.
Of course.
Know, shooting lasers at each other.
Right.
I didn't go down the rabbit hole that, you know, I've heard Rob Zachney talk about his experience, his history with BattleTech and stuff. And mm-hmm. it's such this thing that I feel like I missed out on, you know?
Yeah.
But also I think that kind of helped me approach the music to both of those games in kind of like a unique way, I hope. Where I didn't feel like that weight of responsibility of like doing any sort of homage the correct way. I kind of
right.
was able to take like so first and foremost the story, and then these awesome characters that are really well fleshed out and well written by the writing team at Harebrained Schemes, and then like get like a primer from Jordan Weissman or Mitch about the universe that is like so fascinating on so many levels for both Shadowrun and BattleTech, and then let the gears turn from there without kind of having this like yoke of responsibility to
right.
like, do it the right way or like approach it from this angle. So I felt like kind of privileged in that respect to be able to look at both those IPs from a fresh perspective.
Totally. I mean, tell me how you got into music in general and into kind of games music in general, because I actually think that a lot of our audience maybe has like a pretty good idea, I guess, of what a composer is, but I'm curious if you can actually break down how you got into making music for video games and like what that job is. One of the things I really like to do with the platform is just like, hey, here's a job that people do the thing. It's not just good sounds coming into your ears. Someone sat down and figured out how to do that. So how did you get into it, and like what is the job on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I mean, I think it varies a lot between different types of composers, but for me, my path into games was kind of circuitous. It wasn't like a direct path. I didn't grow up, I didn't go to music school as
right.
a kid. I grew up making music. I grew up kind of my heyday in the 90s was like producing electronic music and hip hop music and stuff. After college, I pretty much got, you know, the typical, you know, office job, was kind of miserable in that space, but still making music on the side. So decided kind of late in life to have a go at it and go back to music school. Mm-hmm. I'd always played games, always loved, you know, the music in games, and was seeing how kind of this independent swell of creativity in gaming with music soundtracks and whatnot was getting really interesting to me. And I was like, you know, I feel like this is kind of my thing to like be able to produce music full time and be able to do it for games that are telling interesting stories was something that I thought I could have a go at. So I did that.
How old were you? Not to like get too specific, but like, how old were you when you were making those decisions about like, oh, I'm going to make music for games?
I think I'm 33 now. So okay. In 2010 was when I left my job.
John, that was, I don't want to surprise you. That was 8 years ago. Time is
right.
wild. I get it 100% because I, you know, similar weird arc here, but like, how does that feel when you think back that like 2010, you left your job and were like, I'm going to make music for video games. And now
right.
you're doing it. You have a game out that has a really great score and that people have been reviewing really well. What's the kind of like perspective looking back on that arc?
It's really weird. I feel extremely lucky. I don't think that I think luck just had a lot to do with it mm-hmm. and being kind of at the right place at the right time and whatnot. But yeah, I was terrified when I first did it. I really had no backup plan. I had no savings. I cashed out the small retirement that I had at that time to go all in on it. So it was really a dumb idea to be honest, but it ended up working out. So, you know, I think luck though had a lot to do with it. And also just being at DigiPen and I didn't have, I didn't have any connection with the game development community at that time. And so
right.
going to DigiPen and actually working on student games, which was really kind of eye-opening and like exhilarating and whatnot. And then these developers, these student developers are then going off to studios. So I was able to get a recommendation from one of the artists that I work with there. That was basically what got my first gig at Harebrained Schemes. And then they kind of kept asking me back after that. So kind of right place, right time sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. I mean, that's one of those things that I think is hard to grip, to come to grips with sometimes. And I think that, you know, I have been thinking a lot about Kanye West lately, as you know, because during the opening stream for Battletech, I compared one of your pieces to the opening piano bit of Runaway. They're different. You were not just lifting Kanye West's Runaway. No, in no way. But I think that we generally, as people, often think about success in one of two ways. A lot of people think about it as just like, and I don't think that either of these are incompatible necessarily, but sometimes you prize the narrative of hard work and dedication and endurance. Sometimes, I guess there's three of these now in my head. Well, sometimes it's hard work, dedication, endurance. Sometimes it's right place, right time. Lucky, I caught the break of a lifetime. Like, you know, I happened to meet the person who could give me the job or who could get me an interview. And then we also do the like, oh, you're a born genius. Like, you're just a natural talent. And when we tell stories about people who are successful, and about, you know, the sort of like Hail Mary passes of life, we sometimes build different like versions of the person out of the building blocks from those three stories. Right. And I think it's rare for me to hear something like what you just said, which is like, listen, I got lucky. Like I took a bad bet and it turned out okay. What's a good...
Well, I think...
Go ahead.
I think it's really easy, like you said, it's as someone who's like, you know, I'm doing well. I'm making a living off of music. That's well enough for anything. But it's, I think when you get into that position, I think it's easy to mythologize your history and be like, oh, I did this and that, and I've like showed up here and like did the extra work there, and like, yeah, everybody does that, you know.
Right.
It's kind of like you're not going to go into music and just and half-ass it. So everybody's working hard. Everybody's trying to get a shot. And
totally.
And I think you just have to like acknowledge the luck factor in there. It's kind of, or else it's kind of disingenuous to me, I think.
Right. When you can't do the other thing, which is like, you can't beat yourself up because it was luck, right? Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. It was luck for everybody. Like everybody got that one great connection or, you know, had someone, you know, help them up or had someone like, you know, say like, you know what, you messed up this first project, but, you know, I'm still going to stick with you. You can do another project with us and get on your feet and like, here's some tips. Try that again. You know, as long as you're succeeding out in the world where there are other people, like you're dealing with other people and you're up to the whims of who you get to deal with it to some degree, you know? Right. I'm curious though, because you say like what you did was a bad bet. What you did was risky and was maybe not wise. For someone who's young listening, who does want to get into games music production, what do they do? And kind of how has in the 8 years since you were a student, how do you think the landscape has changed, you know, in that time?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I'm really optimistic about the prospects of becoming a composer for games or for film. I think that really, like, yeah, if you can get back to school, whether it's a program like at DigiPen, which does music and sound design for game. I actually dropped out of school, by the way. So I dropped
Same.
Out of my second
Listen,
year.
You know, I mean, it's circuitous paths, you know?
Right. But yeah, I would say like the biggest thing for me is just like be prolific, like make as much music as you can and get it in front of as many people as possible. And what worked for me is getting into the network a little bit, making genuine like lifelong friends that are doing the thing that needs your music, you know,
and
focus on making music that you'd want to hear in a game that's lacking from the games that you're playing right now. And just, I think the more music you make and the more people it's in front of, this, you know, increases your odds of getting that one shot.
Can you develop what you just said a little bit about, you know, making the music that you want to hear that you're not hearing right now in other games? What, like, I'm not asking you to throw anybody's under the bus. I'm not asking you to take shots, you know, I'm not asking you to name names, but is there a kind of a general feeling or a general philosophy or feeling where you're like, or a conversation you've had with other musicians over and over again, where you're like, I can't believe that big game X did this instead of this, or like, why is no one doing Y, or like, there are all these opportunities to do Z and no one's doing them. Is there anything like that is explainable to someone like me?
I don't know, like, specifics, but I would say, like, I think in games in general, like, when we're trying to tell, mature adult stories, approaching the score for games in ways that aren't, I guess, so on the nose,
yeah,
is one thing. So, and I thought about this a lot for BattleTech too, because the history of BattleTech and BattleTech games, the MechWarrior 2 soundtrack is something that I feel like is iconic to me,
sure,
in terms of game music. But also, like, if you released a game with that same sort of sound or soundtrack today, you have to adapt with the story and kind of take artistic license and move in a direction that you feel best suits the story and is most evocative in terms of generating feeling, rather than, okay, this is an action cue, so I have to, like, do these big things here and there that are so necessary in games and film now, but maybe I take it a different direction, like doing the runaway piano for a cinematic in BattleTech. Which, right, by the way, when I heard you guys say that, I was cracking up. So.
I hope it was good. Well, the thing is, like, that sequence is really great because it's so sparse, and right. I think you can really feel the touch of, like, I think one of the conversations that I've been having a lot in the last couple of years, last year and a half, I'd say, is the sort of, like, HBOification of certain types of games, like the prestige TV drama. We talk about Game of Thrones, right? But in general, the sort of aesthetics of prestige television slowly trying to work their way into games. And it's been really hard in some instances because, like, many games, especially, like, third-person action games, are mostly about killing dozens and dozens of people. Right. But one of the places where it seems like maybe you've been able to have some success here is, like, in music, where there is nothing, in a cinematic, which there's lots of ways you could have done that cinematic. You could have done it with characters yelling and screaming and with, over-the-top dialogue, and you could have done it, in like almost like the Marvel cinematic style with banter and with, kind of going back and forth and kind of like high, like orchestral, like exciting cues, or like really drawn out low cellos that are just like, this is a sad moment. You know what I mean?
Right.
And instead it's just this like tinkling piano and this almost like disjointed chronologically. You kind of jump. You're almost like doing little tiny time jumps to different moments in this in what's happening to this character, and it's really dramatic and it really works. Is this a space where you feel like, is music a space where you feel free to kind of push the genre forward, push video games forward a little bit, and like take chances that sometimes you know other people in other departments maybe can't just go all the way out there and do wild stuff.
Right, yeah, I think it's just a part of that is the nature of how I was involved in BattleTech and the way I work with harebrained schemes. I think a lot of games, the timeline is so quick, and these cinematics are coming at the very last second before launch, and we've got orchestral recordings set up that you can't change, and you've got timing that's locked, and it's very like almost, militaristically set in stone,
right,
at a certain point. And I think I got lucky with BattleTech and that particular cinematic. I actually wrote that song without even knowing what it was going to go to. I wrote it just as like a piece for BattleTech, and then we ended up editing the cinematic to that piece.
Got so
that's
you.
An example,
wow,
of
awesome.
Like, yeah, right. So the music like kind of came first and informed the story itself in a way. And that actually is the case with a lot of the cinematics and some of the other pieces in the game, is that the music isn't just supporting this kind of like structure that's been set up and built around already. It's in a way it's interwoven into the fabric of the game itself, which I think is hard to do in games just because games are super expensive and super complex, and there's so many different people
right.
involved trying to get it right. And music is the last thing that somebody wants to worry about when they're trying to make sure the game can actually just function, right?
Right, right, totally.
But yeah, so that's a case of it being, you know, pretty lucky and working with a really good creative director, Mike McCain, who right. like, is just so down with like taking little narrative risks and trying things that are a bit unique and not as expected. I mean, there's nothing too unique about that cinematic, to be honest, but
right.
You know, it is kind of
it's a big action moment. It's like it is that thing, but like it is a take that I don't see that often, which is why it resonated with us while we were playing, you know?
Right. Yeah, I'm glad it did. It was something that Mike and I, we really took the cinematics, like we wanted to take them in a unique direction as much as possible with the time we had, for sure.
Totally.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's talk BattleTech specifically. Are you good with like diving deep a little bit? Because I'm curious. You talked about wanting to set up certain sounds for certain feelings and certain kind of themes and motifs and stuff. And I'm curious, like, what are some of the big picture ideas for you when it came to the BattleTech soundtrack? Things you wanted to communicate. How you did it with different instrumentation. You sent over we're gonna host an exclusive behind the scenes look at the BattleTech soundtrack, actually, over on our YouTube page, youtube.com/waypointvice. And in that, like, there's a bit where you say, like, you show off an instrument you built. So I'm curious how all that comes together and like how you built an instrument and what those kind of big picture ideas were and goals for the BattleTech soundtrack specifically.
Right. Yeah, so I think the very first thing I talk about in that video too is the very first song that I wrote is a song called Coronation Day, and it's the track that plays over the tutorial in the first few missions of the game. And that was kind of like, so they had given me the overview of the story of the universe that we were in, the particular part of the galaxy that this was taking place in and whatnot. And I just kind of I took it in the direction of focusing primarily on that, like, you know, BattleTech feudalism political intrigue point of view. There's no electronics in that at all. It's all fairly small orchestra, 60 player orchestra.
You worked with two different orchestras for this, right?
Yes, we recorded some of the score, the main themes, and some of the earlier themes in Germany, and then the rest of it was recorded in Budapest.
Cool. So yeah, so in that theme, is that a divide you made pretty much throughout, where you were like, all right, this is a piece that should not have any synth sounds in it. This is a piece that maybe I can get some electronic sounds into. I feel safe doing that. I feel like it's adding something here.
Yeah, so I tried to. I feel like most of the story stuff has a heavier weight towards orchestral music, and then the more mercenary team focused stuff is kind of a mixing of the two, sometimes ebbing back and forth between synths and live orchestra, and the whole mercenary campaign part was like such an inspiring part of the game for me. It was like, you know, the scrappy team it just Firefly and all this like stuff that I grew up.
That's totally it, right? Like it's I have not played a game, you know, when I was in my like college age, all I wanted was a game that captured that feeling from Cowboy Bebop or Firefly.
Absolutely.
That was just like, we are eating bell peppers and rice because that is all we can afford. And like, that is like the bank account is next to nothing. We got to take another job on. We got to figure out how to make it another week. And you know, there are games that are about management and that kind of touch on that stuff a little bit, but BattleTech is the first game that I've ever played where it's been like, I can hear the creaking of my ship, and I can hear the creaking of my stomach. You know what I mean? Like, there is, we are going to go bankrupt this month if this mission doesn't go well. Like, we, all right, everybody go out there and try to get headshots on these mechs so that we can get better salvage, so that we can sell it and keep the lights on. That it kind of makes sense to me that that's where you would put some of the more electronic sounds.
Yeah, the Merc kind of sim stuff is basically like me going back to school for music. That was, you know. But yeah, so I you know, there's this whole thing in Battletech of about salvage and especially for the Merc sim, it's making do with what you have and
right.
Taking scrap and salvage and repairing your mechs and trying to make ends meet. So that was my impetus for wanting to create my own instrument. I'm air quoting instrument right now. It's essentially just a box. It's a wooden box.
Listen, it's 2018. A lot of instruments are just boxes.
Yeah, exactly. Just that's really it. That's a good point. So it's basically just a box. It's got some microphones embedded in it, and then I attached guitar electronics to it and strings and other things that I can bow and hit. And there's like an old violin that I attached to it too. Basically, just like it adds this, whether I'm hitting it or bowing it or scraping on it, it adds this sort of you know, held together with duct tape feel to some of the tracks. Not necessarily, you know, in the foreground that you can hear, but, you know, it's there. And you kind of, like you said, the ship creaking, it's kind of the bow scratching and under these pieces where it could sound really pretty. There's a solo violinist or something, but then there's like this unsure where it's coming from, this gritty little thing going on down there.
So. How much of your job is that sort of stuff? I think about this with writing so much, which is, I'll take a real example from yesterday, right? Which is I was editing the Battletech review that's up now, waypoint.vice.com. Rob reviewed it. And there's a line in there, which is like, he's describing a situation in which he, a mech of his got into some real trouble, and things went bad. And he writes, "The Blackjack slumped to the ground, a marionette whose strings had been cut." And the original version of that sentence is like, "The Blackjack slumped to the ground. It had turned into a marionette whose strings had just been cut." And it's like, no, okay, we got to get in there and like pull out six words so that we get the rhythm and cadence of "The Blackjack slumped to the ground, a marionette whose strings had been cut." And no one knows that. No one sees that work necessarily, but it has an effect. And it sounds like a lot of your work is sort of similar, which is like your audience isn't going to say, "Oh, that's that instrument that John made in underneath this nice violin solo," but it'll hit them and they'll feel something, even though they don't necessarily have the words to describe it. Do you work a lot in that sort of like subtle space?
I try to a lot, and I think this kind of goes back to us talking about you know, trying to strike new paths in game music and whatnot. Music in general, so many things are done over and over again for a good reason. They work really well,
sure.
And they can apply to multiple situations pretty easily. But there's always, I think, if you ever examine a really good score for a game or for a film, you'll realize that there's a lot of subtlety into the production that takes a lot of time and care to do. You know, everybody that's making music for games is using a lot of the same samples. If they're using digital samples, they're even working with a lot of the same orchestras. And so adding your own kind of trademark to sounds it was important to me. And so that lends itself to the instrument that I made, and then also like the modular synths and the other analog synths. You're working with things that nobody will ever be able to create that exact sound again, and I won't even be able to create it again,
right?
Necessarily.
I mean, that's Yeah, that's like one of my favorite things about music production. I work with a composer for a side project pretty often, and one of my favorite things to hear from him is like, I figured something weird out, and it's like, awesome, I'm so glad, I cannot wait to hear whatever the strange thing you stumbled into is now like a key sound or like something that just adds some texture. And I think the Battletech soundtrack seems to have, from my time playing it, there have been these moments where something sneaks up on me and something suddenly feels malicious or desperate in a way that I did not expect, both in gameplay and in music at the same time. You know, like there's this amazing overlap sometimes, especially in the story missions, where I can feel something goes wrong. You know, an extra lance shows up that I didn't think was supposed to be there, or a heavy mech is like towering over. I had a moment the other day where it basically ended up being this like, it was one of the first heavies that I'd come across pretty early in my campaign, and it was chasing around this tiny mech that I had, this like Jenner or some other light mech. I think it was actually a Locust. Anyway, I can't get into this. through like a mountain pass into like the foggy forests, basically around some hills, and I had been pelting this thing over and over again from a distance with my other mechs, and like it was showing me its back. You know, it was like dedicated to killing my light mech, and so it just like had no interest in defending itself. It was not taking a defensive position. So I was just like throwing missiles at the back, the weak back armor of this gigantic, heavy mech. I remember if it was a griffin or a dragon. I think it was a dragon. I'm knocking its arms off. I've blown up one of its legs, but it will not go down. And the music, like, I have no idea if you have a dynamic or, you know, a programmatic system or something like that there that notices the terror, but there was a moment when it stomped through the trees, and like with no weapons left, just kicked my little Locust down and stood over it, just like a prize fighter, right? Like the image of Muhammad Ali, and just like, you little shit, like, I'm going to step on you. I'm going to kill you. And it was just so scary for me. It was like this moment where everything changed and the strings came in, or it was that kind of like electronic string sound. I don't know if it was that instrument or a different one, but I was like genuinely got chills. I had to rush over another character to like give an alpha strike to this thing and finally put it down before it took the life of one of my best scout pilots. You know, is that a thing you have? Does the game know? Did you make music that could adjust for moments like that, or is that just like, hey, you made some good music and coincidentally it played at the right time?
I'd like to say it's probably one, but I think that it's probably two. So I would say, unless it was a story mission where there was some sort of curated like thing where there are reinforcements coming,
right.
And whatnot. I think we do have an interactive score using WYs, which is the middleware that we use. A lot of that stuff is pretty random. So there could be a chance where, yeah, you're going up against odds that aren't looking so well for you, and that can cause the music to change a little bit.
Cool.
So that could have been the case. It's hard to say.
Right.
But I kind of tried to write music, especially for the story missions, in a way that would sort of match up with things like that too. Just in the randomness. Of how the music is written.
Right. Do you ever write a piece and wish it was for like a different part of the game, in a sense? Like, do you ever write a piece that's like, this is a great story mission beat, but I wish I could like pull this motif away from here because it would be really good over here in just a random mission or like in another story beat? Or is that just about like finding that motif and kind of reorchestrating, recomposing around a shared motif?
Definitely. I mean, for a game like this too, so people play the game in such different ways. Like, some people will play and they'll just try to get through the story missions as quickly as possible.
Right.
Other people will do the Merc campaign for dozens of hours before diving deep into the story. And so the Merc campaign mission music kind of all pulls from the same playlist.
Gotcha.
Of different tracks. And so I watch people play sometimes. I'm like, oh, like I wish I would have put, because the story missions, I feel, is where the music does kind of shine the brightest, and so I wish that I would have added more of those pieces to the main bucket of music. But you know, I think it's
art. That's just like, you're always going to have that regret where you're like, ah, I wish I would have done.
Yeah.
But you know, instead you ship a thing with like 40 tracks and, you know, the soundtrack is like 40 tracks. I'm sure the actual game probably has more little snippets and, you know, other things in there. And you say, hey, I did good work here. And you move on to whatever the next project is, right?
Yeah, ship it.
Ship it. You got to ship it. That's the thing. You know, you don't. There's the George Lucas quote, I think, which is like, "You never finish a movie. You only ever abandon one." Right. And it's like, "Yep, that's me and everything in my life. That's everything I've ever worked on. It's like, this could be better. This could be better. It's got to get done."
I feel that. I go in waves. Like I was listening to the soundtrack the other day and talking to my girlfriend. I was like, "Oh my god!" Like, I blew it. This is terrible. And then 2 hours later, I'm listening to it. I'm like, it's actually not. That's okay.
Yeah, this is all right. Good. This is pretty good. There's some good stuff in here. That's the thing. I feel like it's always that arc of just like, you have the big picture thing. Because when you're thinking about it in the big picture, you can so easily, for me anyway, I can always remember what my goals were and be like, oh, this doesn't hit those at all. Like, this doesn't, as a whole body of work, as a whole piece, I wanted to do X, Y, Z. Right. I can get like a hyper real example, right? Which is like, we launched Waypoint and we were like, fuck the product cycle. Like, we don't want to be tied to the product cycle. And there's a world in which I can zoom out and be like, man, we're doing reviews now. And I'm doing a podcast where I just like talk to somebody who put out a cool game that day. Fuck. Like, I'm totally hewing to the product cycle. And it's easy in with that wide view to beat yourself up at your most, because you're thinking about your most idealistic vision, right? Which is like artsy and unique and like nothing else like it. But then what you do, for me anyway, what I do, and maybe this is true for you, maybe this is you that 2 hours in, is like, you start hearing the little things and you go like, oh, actually, this is something I'm really proud of. This is, I remember this specific moment when we worked on this thing. For me, it's like, I remember editing this review from Rob that does something completely different from what reviews do and normally do, or me writing this other thing. When I work with composers, like, it's always like, it's a similar thing of like, oh, you know what, we were going for this other sound, but here it is, and we found this other neat thing. But same thing with working with video editors. And like, the big picture falls apart in the face of all of the little wins. And you start I stop worrying as much about that big picture vision when I can point to little things I'm proud of. Is that sort of the thing that happened there? And if so, I guess the second thing is like, what are you proudest of in this soundtrack?
Yeah, from my perspective, the whole, you know, working on anything for 2.5 years and being so close to it and hearing it every day, and working with it on such like a granular level where I'm, you know, taking these really complex pieces and splitting them up for interactivity and putting in them into wise and you know, messing around with all the different variances and stuff. I'm basically looking at these tracks in a way that nobody is ever going to look at them. So I'm looking at them from this like on high perspective of them being, you know, not reaching this perfect, you know, status that is impossible to reach. And there's something really interesting is once you release the soundtrack and then you hear people that are actually hearing it for the very first time, you kind of get a more pure, a pure look at what music really is. And usually music is kind of that first few moments with it, the reaction and the feeling, especially when you're playing the game, the first feeling of watching a cinematic in Battletech and not having, you know, seen that cinematic since it was, you know, first storyboarded a year and a half ago, and it's been, you know, through 20 iterations, and you don't know about this, you know, one hit sound that you put in there that's like a millisecond off and not right, you know, that stuff that only a crazy person will pay attention
to.
Right. So there's like, you know, after like the dust settles, it's kind of this process of slowly being like, okay, I have really unrealistic expectations for myself and my perspective is not a real perspective for the consuming audience. Yeah.
What is the thing that you hope people take away from the soundtrack?
You know, my main thing is I just want people to get the feels, you know, like that's my job is really, I want somebody to finish a mission and see a cinematic and be like, damn, like, wow, like that was really cool. And that, I think that's just the only thing I want somebody to, even if they can't even put their finger on why it made them feel that way, I think that's in some ways even better. That means the music was good in a way that didn't stand out enough for them to say, oh, the music made this good. If they're just saying, like, this made me feel so crazy at this moment, or I felt all the emotions when so-and-so died, or this thing happened. That's my great success for this.
Awesome. A couple more questions and I'll let you go. So are you playing through right now? Do you have a campaign in the main actual release?
I don't yet. And I'm probably going to, I need to like chill for a little bit.
Fair.
And then go back with Fair. Like very, you know, but I definitely, so I probably put like 150 hours into the
game. Okay. You're good to go. You've been there. Yeah.
Yeah, but I have cheats, so I've got all the cheats. I can just like point a button at somebody and they'll explode in front of my face. So I don't know the struggle that a lot of people are talking about, which I think is such an important aspect of the game, are those tense moments. So
right.
I'd really like to just take a breather and then go back in and create
totally.
A character and play it like I've never played it before.
Do you have a call sign in mind already?
I might need some help with that.
Okay, just email me. I'm good at names. I like names.
I do like Tirefire was really
Tirefire
good.
Tirefire is, I'm really happy with our stream character. We're going to try to pick up that stream sometime this week. I'm literally waiting for RAM to show up for my home computer as we speak so that I can upgrade it and actually run it and also stream at the same time, because right now it's like I got to pick one or the other. If a heavy mech was an instrument, if an assault class mech was an instrument, what type of instrument would it be?
Ooh, it'd probably be a cymbassi.
What's a cymbassi?
It's a brass instrument, like really low, like what makes that low, like rumbly sound.
Okay.
Bombs and stuff.
Yeah, all the bomb instrument, of course. Yeah, I got you. I've been to movies. The bomb instrument, of course. Last thing is you know, obviously I think the fan response has been really great. I guess it's kind of two-parter again a little bit. One is, how has it felt to kind of see some of the negative response that's around stuff that's barely a focus of the game at all? I don't know if you've seen some Steam reviews that have been negative, but mostly negative because y'all included they, them pronouns and are like, have a story that's anti-authoritarian. Has that been something that you've like been paying attention to at all?
I've definitely noticed it. And I mean, just grow up. I mean, that's all I can say is like, it's extremely, disheartening, on one end, but it's also seeing the, you know, some hardcore BattleTech fans that are like rallying, you know, against that is also very heartening at the same time. So, but honestly, it's just like, grow up. I mean, it's hard to, yeah. I mean, it's difficult for me to go down that hole of engaging and you know, looking at all these reviews and stuff from people that clearly, you know, haven't played the game and don't really care about it at all. It's one of those things that just, it makes you really pissed off.
Totally. I mean, so the other half of that, though, is what you got at, right? Which is, there are these people who have wanted a BattleTech game for decades, and not, they play the MechWarrior games, they might play MechWarrior Online right now, they probably played MechWarrior, you know, 2 like you, and Mercenaries, and 3 and 4 and every, you know, and they played Mech Commander and they played Mech Assault, but they wanted a BattleTech game, and now they finally have that. I'm curious what those fans have been like for you, and I just wanted to say briefly, like, it has been so interesting seeing those sorts of, like, there was something that you kind of think about as like 1980s tabletop game fans, as being regressive, which is maybe unfair, maybe fair, maybe unfair. It's hard, you know, there's some truth and there is some fiction there, right? Because like everyone, big groups of people are greatly diverse and have a lot of varied perspectives. But it has been, like you said, heartening to see those folks, the folks who are like dyed in the wool, used to go to their local game store to play the miniatures game, coming out in defense of the game and saying, hey, judge it on its fucking merits, not mm-hmm. because like you've found the latest, projectile in your culture war that is like complete bullshit anyway. So it's been, I just wanted to agree with you that it's heartening to see those fans, but I'm curious what it's like to make a soundtrack for people who do have that 20, 30 year long like desire for this thing. Is that a lot of pressure? And what's the response from those folks been like?
Yeah, I think it definitely is a lot of pressure. But again, like my history with BattleTech, not being involved or knowing much about the lore and never playing the tabletop game, I felt like, you know, I approached the music in as an honest way as possible. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't even if I try to like emulate what other folks think BattleTech music should be. So there is always a fear that like you're gonna piss off a lot of people if you do the wrong thing or make music that isn't what they thought it was gonna be. But honestly, like I can't spend time worrying about that. I just gotta focus on making music that makes me feel something, and I feel like if I'm feeling it, then other people are gonna feel it as well. Mm-hmm. And so hearing the response from people that are, you know, diehard BattleTech fans, have been doing it for 30, 20 years, whatever it is, and actually saying like, this is like your, I think one person the other day said something along the lines of like, you're making music that I was hearing in my head as a young kid but couldn't like fully articulate it at that age, like essentially like maturing the music to BattleTech for his adult his adult self,
right?
It was kind of cool, like, you know, saying like, I never knew that this music like this would fit so well in this universe, you know, not just like 80s 90s shredding,
right? I was gonna say shredding guitars and like right. metal, and like, because that's the kind of the thought that you have, I think, with mechs. Yeah. So often it's like, oh, right. It's mechs, so like you said, it's action, and it's, you know, the BattleTech universe is very much one of those universes that was conceived of in the 80s, and so like, it doesn't really have the internet or Wi-Fi, you know, it has something mm-hmm. similar, it has like a network, but it's very much like the BBS style system versus the contemporary, what we think of as the internet. And I love that about it. And it's part of why I think the synths that you do use are all really interesting. You use an analog synth. You know what I mean? Like, there's stuff there that in the soundtrack you try to, there's a very physical technological feel in this game, in the right. soundtrack. Right. It's cool that you've been able to reach them for that. Go ahead.
Yeah. That sort of, you know, BattleTech has a lot of baggage. It's got a lot of problematic. Yeah, got a lot of problematic stuff in it. And you know, as the music, it's insulated from a lot of that. But then again, it also, when you think BattleTech music or Mech Warrior music or whatever it is, it does occupy like a specific time and place.
Right.
Just like, you know, when I tell people I live in Seattle, they think that, you know, everybody here listens to grunge music still, but that's like still like a very 90s thing. Right. Uh-huh. Not to say that it's not amazing, but.
Right. Exactly. And I will say, I opened up this behind the scenes video with you. You're wearing a plaid shirt.
There you go.
A flannel shirt. You know, you've glasses on. That's grunge. Your hair is a little too nice in this video, though, and you're in front of an orchestra, which is not very grunge, John. thank you so much for hanging out. I really love talking with you about it. I can't wait to see what you do next, because what you've done here is really exceptional. Congratulations on the launch.
It was awesome, Austin. Thanks for having me.
Great. Thanks so much. We'll be back with more Waypoint Radio. We have a lot going up on the feed this week. Between this, we have Rob's Frostpunk review and a conversation about that. We have Rob's BattleTech review and a conversation about that. And we'll have our normal Friday Waypoint Radio also. So really fill in the feed with some cool stuff. And again, please go to youtube.com/waypointvice to check out that incredible behind-the-scenes video with John Everest and looking at the creation of the Battletech score. All right, everybody. Peace.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.